Welcome to the jungle. An amazing Friday to you. My name is Jim Rome. Program brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've got two words for you clones on this Friday. Game on! Nice to have you here. You might wonder why that is. I will tell you momentarily. Let me set this thing up for you. First, starting with what's on the other side of the glass. Alvin DeLauro is back in the fold. He was not here yesterday. The old man, Ike Garrett Ritt, filled in admirably. Most admirable of all, though, was him starting the program by looking directly through the glass and into my eyes, and before turning on my mic to open up the show, hit me with, and I quote, "Game on!" That's so awesome, Mike. Because I needed that kick in the ass. I needed that inspiration. I needed that motivation. I've done it 30 years. You've been here like 3 weeks. You should sit in front of me and tell me, game on! Let me tell you something, Mike. I was ready to run through a wall for you after that. All morning long, as I was getting ready for the program yesterday, I kept thinking, man, I don't want to be here. I don't want to do this. We're in the midst of a global pandemic. What the hell am I doing here? How am I going to get through the opening segment, much less 3 hours? And then Ike looks at me dead in the eye and says, game on! And it was like I was shot out of a cannon. That's it. And it carried over to today. I'm good. I'm great. I always will be after that. But in the event that I ever slip, I ever drop off, I know where to go to get that shot of adrenaline. Ike.
It's lit!
It's Ritt! So, clones, game on! What? He said that to me yesterday. What an amazing jungle moment. 1-800-636-8686. Game on is the new step your game up. Man, I wish we had the audio. You have your telephone number. It is toll-free. You want to hit me up right now. I've got an interview coming up next segment. Jerry Stackhouse, Vanderbilt head basketball coach, is joining me in about 15 minutes from right now. And I'm not telling Stack game on. He knows. Stack knows. And in the meantime, you are more than welcome to hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. You can email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Coming up in hour number two, we do another deep dive. We have not had one yet this week. Last week, we had Brett Favre and we had Tiger Woods. Today, a deep dive and a look back at Ryan Lochte. My man was dumb. My man probably still is dumb. It sounds kind of harsh, but then you think about what went down and what he said, what he did, how he handled himself. We do that deep dive and we go back. Joining us to break that down, too, the way we've been doing these things, we do the deep dive, which means it's generally two segments, and then we bring in a expert to help us go over it and break it down. Dan Wetzel was at the Olympic Games where Lochte went Lochte, so he will join us in the second hour. In hour number three, we continue to get ready for the NFL draft. I've got another draft prospect, Arkansas defensive tackle McTelvin Agim. So that's coming up the third hour. Alvin is here. We will have Alvin's week that was. I've got an ATP, and I want to send you into the weekend with a preview of episode 124 of the Jim Rome Podcast with Tony Hawk. Man, I got a good show for you. Lots to talk about. Yesterday, I had you come in here and share with me your Rona routines. I'm not going to reset that whole thing, but if you want to kind of let me know what's up, what's going on, go ahead and do so. 1-800-636-8686. All right, there is your setup. Hey, quick question. Does anybody know what the hell Bill O'Brien is doing? No, seriously. I'm not trying to be clever or cute or coy or witty. I'm asking because I seriously want to know. Does anybody actually know what the hell Bill O'Brien is doing? Because I sure as hell don't. And they pay me to know things like that, but I don't. And I'm not sure at this point that anybody else does either, because yesterday he was at it again. Bill O'Brien sent a second round pick, number 57 overall, to the Rams for Brandon Cooks, and a fourth round pick in 2022? Again, I ask, the hell is Bill O'Brien doing? I mean, it's pretty rare that you see everybody dump all over a single trade because it's pretty tough to get everybody to agree on anything at all. But everybody agrees that Bill O'Brien is doing a hell of a job as GM. And I don't mean that in a good way. There are a few things in life that are guarantees, but here is one. If Bill O'Brien makes a trade, if Bill O'Brien is involved in a trade, Bill O'Brien got worked in that trade. And you can take that to the bank. And not just any bank, but the blood bank. You know how every time you see a Mitchell Trubisky in a Bears uniform pick, you're reminded that the Bears traded up to get him instead of taking either Deshaun Watson or Patrick Mahomes. You know that. Yeah, well, Bill O'Brien got Deshaun Watson that year. And it seems like everything he's done since then has been in an effort to try and outsuck the Bears when it comes to roster management. I mean, crap. We accidentally got Deshaun Watson on our team.
Watson?
How do we do that? We better do something about that right away. Quick, let's trade Jadeveon Clowney to Seattle and pay part of his salary as well. And then let me give up a ton to get Laremy Tunsil, but not agree to an extension before that deal. So that way I make sure to give him a sledgehammer and he can hold on to it until it's time to hit me in the face with it. That's bad. Ritt, you are not in that chair. Look at Alvy. Like, that's bad. That's bad, but what can I do that would be even worse? Wait, I know. I'll trade DeAndre Hopkins for a busted up running back on a terrible contract. And now let me make up for that terrible trade with another terrible trade by sending a second round pick to the Rams for a guy with a tough medical history and an even tougher contract. Yeah, I understand that Houston needed help at wide receiver after trading a future Hall of Famer a couple of weeks back in what is going to go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history. That's not hyperbole. That is not an exaggeration. The Hopkins trade was that bad when O'Brien made it, and then you looked even worse when you saw what Minnesota got for Stephon Diggs. And it was pretty clear that a big part of the reason why O'Brien moved Hopkins was he didn't like Hopkins. O'Brien keeps saying he wanted a new contract. He wanted more money. Yeah, maybe. Just don't tell me that a part of this was not the fact that he did not like Hopkins. And as I said then, and I'll repeat right now, Bill O'Brien is not nearly good enough as a coach to let things get personal with great players like DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins is about a million times better at his job than O'Brien is at his job. So O'Brien cannot let things get personal. He's not good enough at what he does to be moving Hall of Fame players out. Bill Belichick can do that. Bill O'Brien cannot. And it seems like a pretty safe bet that things were personal with Clowney as well. So then you come to this trade and you see him giving up a second round pick for Brandon Cooks. And now I'm wondering what that second round pick did to Bill O'Brien too. What did that second round pick do to piss off O'Brien? And how did it become personal with an inanimate object? Hell, a draft pick isn't even an inanimate object. It's an idea. It's a notion. And it seems like O'Brien is bent with it anyway because he just gave that away like he does everything else. And the only good thing you can say about the Cooks trade is that it's not nearly as bad as the Hopkins trade. But that's about it. Because on every other level, it makes no sense whatsoever. In the face of the deepest wide receiver draft in years, O'Brien decided to trade for a wide receiver on a fat contract who's got 5 concussions in 6 NFL seasons, reportedly, that we know about. And I say that as somebody who likes Brandon Cooks. I do. He's been coming on this show since his Oregon State days. He's always been great to talk to. He's put up some numbers. I'm not criticizing him. I'm just stating the facts. And yes, he has put up some numbers in the past, but he's coming off a year where he had 42 receptions, under 600 yards, and 2 touchdowns in a Sean McVay offense. But he had 2 concussions in a 4-week span, 5 and 6 seasons that we know of. Not his fault, but extremely concerning, or at least it should be. Apparently it's not if you're Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien sees that and says, hey man, come on over. Looks good to me. Can't really do any physicals right now. Doesn't matter to me. You got a fat contract? Great. He is on a large contract that the Rams were eager to move away from. Kind of like how O'Brien was willing to bring in David Johnson when the Cardinals were desperate to move on from his contract. So the lesson here is, if you've got an oversized contract that you regret, call Bill O'Brien. He'll take it, and he won't just take it. He'll give you something for it, and he'll do it despite the fact that he's going to have to spend a ton of money still on Tunsil, Watson, and the defense in the coming years, which makes bringing in Cooks on this deal instead of a rookie on a rookie deal even more reckless and even more inexplicable and even more insane. But leave the contract and the concussions to the side. How does Cooks fit in with the other guys who are already in Houston, like Will Fuller, Kenny Stills, and Randall Cobb? That's screwed. Who cares? Who cares? I'm not even sure O'Brien cares. So if O'Brien doesn't care, why would I? Who cares? Who knows? Whatever. It's so far past the point of thinking that Bill O'Brien, the GM, should fire Bill O'Brien, the coach. And past the point of thinking that Bill O'Brien, the coach, should lobby to get Bill O'Brien, the GM, fired. I'm now at this point just trying to figure it all out. It's like some great riddle or puzzle. How many of you are doing puzzles during COVID-19? That's your best puzzle of all. Just spread that thing out all over the dining room table and try and put that together. Normally, I would be the first to say that a GM or a coach knows more than we all do. They've got the information. They have the experience. They have more of everything than you and I do. They must see something that we don't see. Except in this case, I don't think that's the case at all. I don't think Bill O'Brien is playing three-dimensional chess. I don't think Homeboy is even playing tic-tac-toe. I think he's just smashing the trade button and just waiting to see what happens. And everything that happens is a complete and utter disaster. Damn, that took a lot out of me. I'm going home. Come on, Bill. The hell is this guy doing?
This is stupid.
Like I tweeted yesterday, is this guy just trolling us all right now?
That is like the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Well, that doesn't relate directly to Ryan Lochte. You want dumb. We'll get into dumb next hour. Got an update on UFC 249. It's off. But man, don't say that Dana White didn't go down swinging. He did. UFC 249 is off. However, Fight Island is not off, which is good. That's coming up also. I got a lot of show for you. Do you want to be a part of it? If not, I will do all the work. If you would like to help out and hit me up and be on the phones, hit me up on Twitter, hit me up on email, whatever you want. You know where to find me. Come on in. When we come back, Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse. Next hour, a deep dive on Gia. When it's time to hire, finding the right person for your game on. When it's time for game on, finding the right person for your company can be challenging. This is especially true in a small business where every employee truly impacts the organization. So when you are ready to find that next hire, LinkedIn can help. LinkedIn Jobs matches your role with qualified candidates so you can find the right person quickly. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with 675 million members worldwide. I am one of them. I'm on the site every single day. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for, so you can hire the right person faster. Things like collaboration, creativity, adaptability. LinkedIn looks beyond just hard skills and puts your job post in front of a qualified candidate. Candidates, in fact, every single day. So it's seen by people looking for jobs like yours. That's why companies rate LinkedIn Jobs the number one hiring platform for delivering quality hires. Find the right person for your business with LinkedIn Jobs. Get $50 off your first job post when you visit linkedin.com/Rome. That's linkedin.com/Rome. Terms and conditions do apply.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Come on now, up and at 'em. Let's get it. Finish the week strong. I'm Jim Rome. Still in our Southern California Bay studio, still live, and still simulcasting on CBS Sports Network, so radio and TV both. It's great to be here. As promised, we're joined right now by the head basketball coach at Vanderbilt. He was named head coach in April of 2019. He spent the previous season as an assistant with the Memphis Grizzlies. 2 seasons as head coach of the Raptors D-League team. He was a D-League Coach of the Year. He was a 2-time NBA All-Star, a National Player of the Year, an All-American at North Carolina. He, of course, is Jerry Stackhouse. Stack, it's great to have you back. Let me first ask you, how are you doing, Jerry, in the middle of the pandemic?
Hey, Rome, good to talk to you, man. As well as possible, man. Just trying to stay safe and stay out of harm's way.
Good.
Make sure we social distance and stay home.
That's the point, right? Great strategy. All right, so Jerry, you and I spoke nearly a year ago, and you were introduced at that time as the new head coach at Vanderbilt. I'm not sure that anything could have prepared you or any other coach for what has taken place over the past month. So what's it been like for you, and how have you gone about leading your guys during this time?
Well, man, we just have to do everything virtually now, right? Zoom has been really, really popular. Been able to do visits and everything over the internet, been able to talk to families, have to show them the campus and everything that no one's been allowed. We had visits set up there in the spring and just wasn't able to execute them that way. So, but everybody is dealing with the same challenges but we're just trying to make the best of it.
Jerry Stackhouse, my guest. Now, you had been coaching in the G League and the NBA, which means you were dealing with slightly older players, but before that, you were really involved in youth basketball. So when you come back to college, how does it feel to be coaching younger guys once again?
I think it's similar. It's just a different game, you know, for the pro game from the college. But at the same time, it's still kids that's learning how to play the game and how to share the floor with other good players. So from that standpoint, it's still basketball. But you have to watch over them a little bit more. Like when you have pro guys, you work with them for 3 hours, then you send them home and they have their own families. But here we have to stay on top of their academics, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to do in order to graduate. So it's a little bit more hands-on. It's like you're having a teenager at home, trying to make him do his homework in high school. But these guys are mature and have a really good group, so we can kind of lay down at night and not have to worry about them so much.
That's good. Jerry Stackhouse joining us. So, Stack, when you look back on that first season, you knew it was going to be a challenge, but there were some highlights, including how the team finished up the regular season. What do you make of how this team grew over the course of the year?
We just stayed the course, wrong, man. We had some challenges. Again, our leading scorer, probably first-round draft pick here coming up in the next draft, whenever that is. But he's Aaron Nesmith. He went down for us, and we just kind of had to adjust on the fly. He played in one conference game, and he was leading the conference in scoring and leading the country in three-point percentage, on pace for historic year, and then we lose him and have to try to change gears a little bit. But I thought our guys kept fighting, man, and ended up on a really good note, winning a couple at the end and having a big win during the year against LSU.
Jerry Stackhouse is joining us. And then after the win over South Carolina at the end of the regular season, you told the team, quote, way to go and be us. We're going to continue to be us, end quote. So how would you describe what that means to be us? Like, what is the identity within the program that you're looking for?
But it's just, I think for us, there was a lot of learning, a lot of teaching, a lot of film sessions of trying to understand what we need to do and do it consistently. And we did it well for just stretches, but we didn't do it for as long as we should have, even though we had personnel change. I think we had to believe that we did things the way that we were taught to do it and just trusted that. And it's crazy with these kids. Sometimes even if the shortcut way is the hardest way, they still want to take the shortcut way. So I think it's the process of just learning. And I think they really bought in toward the end. We did what we were supposed to do defensively, played how we wanted to play offensively, sharing it with good spacing. And like, we're out there with 6 scholarship players and 4 walk-ons, and we're winning on the road at Alabama and coming back here and beating South Carolina, 2 teams that were, possibly NCAA tournament teams. So it was just good to see our kids persevere and kind of stay the course and have something good happen at the end.
Vanderbilt head coach Jerry Stackhouse joining us. Stack, one of the things I really respect about you is how you've gone about pursuing coaching. You didn't skip steps. You were putting in the work, and you were coaching in gyms in Delaware and Maine out of the spotlight. There's also a story that you went to Hawaii at one point to talk with Don Nelson about offensive philosophy. What was that trip like, and what did you take away from it?
Oh, man, let me tell you, it was some fun, with Nelly. Yeah, we did talk a little basketball, but more so than anything, just hanging out with him, man. He took, golfing with him and just, hearing the stories You know, it was a wonderful time for him to just open up, you know, for open his house up for me. He, my wife, we went over there and we, you know, he didn't put us in the hotel. It's like, you guys are staying with us. And we just hung out and got to see some of the things that Nelly likes to do, man. So we had some fun for sure.
Hey, Stack, I'm not asking you to give anything up or anything, but you got to see some of the things that he likes to do. Did you get to do some of the things that he likes to do?
Hey, I did not inhale, no.
It looks like he does, though.
Oh, man. Nelly, I think he's one of the coolest coaches that I ever played for. And then when you just get a chance to know him, you know, after the game and just, you know, his stance and who he is as a person. Obviously, he's known a little bit more for some Nelly Kush and some different things like that now. But I think for him, his contribution to the game he deserves to do whatever he wants to do. He pretty much owns Hawaii out there. He runs a lot of the timeshares. He's the man out there, so he can get in any restaurant, go anywhere he wants to. Now he's the man in Hawaii.
Good for him, Stack. Good for him. I love it. Jerry Stackhouse joining us. So speaking of coaches, what was it like in the days at Carolina when NBA guys like Michael Jordan would come back to Chapel Hill?
Man, Mike used to come back, I think he was in between not playing at that point, right? And he was back spending some time with us, and it was like in awe. All of us was in awe, you know, seeing Michael Jordan walk through the gym, you know, that cool strut. And then all of a sudden, you know, we messing around after practice, he jumped in practice and competed with us. And then afterwards, you know, messing around one on one and different things like that. So, man, and I had an opportunity to hear him speak. He came back and speak at an event that we were having on campus, and just listening to him, man, you just hung on every word. You know, just watching, you know, speak all of his experiences. So it was crazy, you know, just to be in that at that time, the impact that he had on all of us. We were wearing his shoes at that time, so you know you can imagine how that was.
For sure. Jerry Stackhouse joining us. You know, Stack, because you had such a great NBA career, the guys that you recruit obviously want to take that next step, and they want to play professionally. What was the transition like for you from college to the NBA from a physical standpoint and from a defensive standpoint?
Well, I mean, for me, it was definitely an adjustment. But I think it's so much, man. I wish there's so much what I know now, I wish I knew then, right? Or even taught then. And I was in college for 2 years. I learned a lot under Coach Smith, but I just could imagine being there, you know, for four now, right? And getting all of that information and not kind of having it pieced together over the first, you know, 3 or 4 years of your career. Now you got to try to figure it out on your own, you know. And then I think, you know, where you get drafted and, you know, teams that have a great development system. A lot of that was just kind of trial and error for me early on, because I went to a franchise that was in the mix of a ownership change. So a lot of things were uncertain, you know. It's like, there's a difference as opposed to going to a San Antonio Spurs team where, you know, they have a development plan and they, you know, the young guys, they have this regimen every day. You know, I didn't have that. And then, you know, once you get a little bit, you know, to different situations, once I was able to get to Detroit, then you start to see, you have veterans and you learn how to play. And, okay, like, all right, I can be really good at this. But that transition is different, because I was a power forward. And now all of a sudden I'm coming and they're telling me I'm a two guard. So now I got to learn how to chase guards and wings off of screens when I hadn't done a lot of that up until that point. So being able to kind of continue to work and understand what I needed to do to develop myself into an all-star, you know, wing was, it took that perseverance. And I think that's the message that you try to give these kids, to continue to work on your game, continue to try to bring something different every year, every day, get a little bit better, because, you know, your competition is doing the same.
Vanderbilt head basketball coach Jerry Stackhouse is joining us. Stack, you had a great conversation recently with my guy Woj on his pod, and you set the record straight on a number of things. I want to ask about one thing in particular. The record that you set straight on the legend, well, legends, about a 17-year-old Kobe Bryant coming around when you were in Philly, and the thought that he was consistently beating everybody one-on-one. For those who have heard those stories and do not know the truth, exactly what did happen when Kobe was coming around as a teenager? How did those matchups go, actually?
No, I mean, I just think, going back to that situation, I mean, where everybody feels like they're talking about the Kobe, the 5 championship Kobe, not the 17-year-old Kobe, and they just, you know, they want him to be a 17 who he was at the end of his career. And that wasn't the case, you know. It was, you know, and there's a lot of stories. I've always refuted him. I mean, I think I at Kobe one time about somebody was saying something about what he was doing in high school, and I at him, you know. So it's like this isn't anything new, you know. But it's like, did he win a game? Yes, he probably won some games, but it was Kobe was like ton of vision. I mean, he was Michael Jordan. Everything, he felt like every time he was in isolation mode. So I remember the older guys, the Lionel Simmons and Snoop Graham and all the older field. I mean, it's like Eddie Jones and Aaron McKee, Mark Macon, all these type of guys in the gym. If, you know, me coming out of high school, I mean, coming out of college as a third pick, I think some of these other guys would be one more of the guys that I was, you know, more engaged with, because those was going to be my peers, not 17-year-old Kobe. Yes, was he in the mix? Absolutely. Lukey was throwing out there in some games, but it wasn't like he was even playing every game. No, not taking anything away from his talent, but just the stories and the lore that kind of grew from, you know, as he grew, as his stature grew and become an iconic player. Now these stories are reaching back that he was killing everybody in the gym, killing everybody in the Sixers, and that just wasn't the case. And that's what I set straight a little bit. And now all of the Kobe stands, I got to block them all on social media now. But it's just part of it. But I'm a truth teller. You ask me a question, I'm going to tell you the truth.
Nothing but respect for that, Stack. And if Kobe were here, I think he would tell you the same thing. I think Kobe also was a truth teller. I appreciate that response. But you're right. I mean, people... there's a lot to this, obviously, but you're right. People see Kobe, the five-time champ, and they want to think that he just kind of rolled out into the world like that, but that's not the case. He was self-made. He put in the time. As long as we're talking about one-on-one stories, there's one from when you were with the Raptors, the organization, and you met Fred Van Vliet for the first time. Is it true that he wanted to play one-on-one with you and he immediately started bumping you and battling with you? What was that matchup like?
Yeah, I mean, we were at Tim Gerkovich's camp, you know, and he was like an unsigned free agent, and they have some of the younger players go out there and play. And we just started messing around. He was on one of our kids. Like, I was working for the Raptors at the time. So we just out there banging, a little bit just playing one-on-one. And next thing you know, and this is before things even got started. And so I was like, all right, we played spots. And next thing I know, man, we're out there in a full sweat, you know, before anything even going. This kid was such competitive because I'm trying to give him all I got. Next thing I know, he's bumping me and playing as hard as he can. And next thing, he's getting to the basket and finishing all these type of finishes. And I'm like, oh, man, this kid right here is tough. And, like, so he was came in as an undrafted free agent, but there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to do all he could to make that team, and he did. And you kind of see what has transpired since then, man. So it's just a great – you know, symbol of, again, perseverance. Kid went undrafted, even though he knew he was good enough, and he came in with a chip on his shoulder, and he went toe-to-toe with Kyle Lowry every day. And, I mean, that's what won everybody over. And like I said, the rest is history. He's a world champion now.
So, Stack, one more thought about that, and I'll let you go. It wasn't just Van Vliet. You also coached Pascal Siakam and Norman Powell in the G League as well. How much pride was there for you then last year in watching the guys that you coached in the G League go on to win an NBA championship?
Man, it was a ton of pride from both sides, from the players and what we work with them, and, you know, even with the coaching staff. You know, Nick and I, we used to sit up all the time and just, you know, draw up plays in different situations on the plane and, you know, talk basketball, talk hoop. But, you know, those guys, I won a championship with those guys. I mean, they knew what it was like when they came down to the G League, how we were going to approach things. We were going to have a business approach. It wasn't a day off because you got sent down. You were sent down here for a reason to get better and to work on deficiencies. But, again, we're going to run this thing, and it's tight. We're going to be on time. We're going to watch film. We're going to understand what we're going to do. And when I was with the, you know, before games, if it was a 3-on-3 or they weren't playing and you know that they weren't really in the mix for this game tonight, then come on, let's go upstairs. Let's get some reps. Make sure that we're working. And I think that's what they always got from me, whether it was 2-on-2, 3-on-3, that you have to compete. And those three guys that you just mentioned never had an issue with wanting to go up there and compete. And they didn't care. All right, 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, whatever. They, you know, and I throw James Johnson, he was always with us with that group. Those were guys that just, you know, loved to play basketball, and it showed. And that's why the success that they're having right now really isn't a surprise to me, because I won a championship with them and I saw them up close and personal, and, you know, understanding Nick and, you know, his smarts and ability to coach the game of basketball. you know, it was definitely gratifying. Which I, in a sense, you want to be there, part of it. But I think in spirit, you know, they know that the contributions that, you know, myself and my staff did to help those guys get better all came to fruition last year in the championship.
They know, Stack. One quick thought on Nick, since you brought him up. I love Nick Nurse. I love the guy. You're a head coach now. You've played for some of the best ever to do it. What makes him so good and so effective as a coach?
Well, I just think he's, you know, willing to adjust. I mean, to personnel. He doesn't come in with the mindset of, okay, we have to do it this way. And he'll try something, and if it doesn't work, okay. Then, I mean, that didn't work, but I think he definitely, you know, he understands. He's brilliant offensively, you know. And I think we, you know, over the years and working with Case and different scenarios, we've seen a lot of different stuff, and now it's about trying to figure out what you like to do. And I think he figured out a plan, but it's so much fun when you got guys out there that have the ability and can switch and do a lot of different things that team was capable of doing. But he is one of the best, man. I don't believe that it's a fluke. I mean, yeah, they had the talent, they got Kawhi, they got a lot of things fell into place. But, you know, you got to be able to manage that, and Nick did a hell of a job with it.
He's a two-time NBA All-Star, a National Player of the Year. He was an All-American in North Carolina. He is the head basketball coach at Vandy. Stack, you're making my job easy. It's so good to run you down. You know, I appreciate you, Jerry. Thank you very much for that.
Appreciate you, Roman. Take care, man. Stay safe.
Stay safe, Stack. You're the best. I love Stack. I've always loved Stack. He's one of my favorites. I don't play favorites. Stack is one of my favorites. Jerry Stackhouse. What a great conversation. Vandy is lucky to have him. Vandy's got an amazing baseball coach in Tim Corbin. Vandy's got a great basketball coach in Stack. Give him time. Let him do what he does. Let him implement his system. Get his guys in, and they'll kill it. My thanks to Jerry Stackhouse. All right, then. Top of the hour. We do another deep dive. When we come back, phone lines are open. I see one former Smackoff champ already on hold. Where is everybody on this Friday? I mean, you should know by now. Game on! Come on. When Ritz in the house, the bar has been raised. There is a certain standard that you must all meet. Never mind my standard. We're talking Ritz standard. I'm trying to meet his standard. We all are. Dan Wetzel next hour. McTelvin Aguim in hour number 3. Albie's week that was in hour number 3. Your phone call is coming up too. Don't go anywhere. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Big segment next.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show. Southern California. This is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there's Hawk. Looking really put off. Wake up, man. Friday is an ATP day. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Go to CBSSportsRadio.com/AskThePros. Ask me a question. Listen later on. I might answer yours, but probably not. I can almost assuredly tell you that I will answer Bella B's. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Going into the break, I said there was a former Smackoff champ on hold. Now there are two. Quick reaction, though. Wells in the 360 is in on Twitter. He writes, Bill O'Brien made a terrible decision that nobody understands. Signed, Robert Dasmati. That's true. Dasmati worked not only in sports talk radio, but at the highest level of sports talk radio. He worked on this show, and he quit to get a job in city government. Hey, Bobby, it's normally the other way around. People stuck in a job that they hate working for the city, and they'd give anything. They'd cut off their arm to work in sports talk radio. But you went the other way, Dasmati. Jamie in Green Bay, who pumps you up more? Ritt or the flag football frat bro? Game on.
We decide what f- goes, who goes, and when we win and when we f- lose, which is f- never.
I don't know, Ritt. You did motivate me, but that bro is something else. All right, so I mentioned that I had a couple of Smack-Off champs on hold, including this guy. He won the 2010 Smack-Off, Vic and NoCal. Now, for whatever reason, okay, let me backtrack. The one thing you do not want to do is get on the wrong side of Victor. I've seen Vic eviscerate individuals. But now he's not going to waste his time going after one person. He's going after an entire region. Remember the last time he called? He went in on Buffalo.
Losing is built into that fabric of that dump of a city, man. And it's all because of the people who live there. Okay, look, I'm not saying people in Buffalo are all stupid and low IQ or anything. But come on, I mean, that idiot Rick actually qualifies to be a teacher in that city, man. What does that tell you?
That was Vic in his last call. He's back. Vic, what's going on?
Don't get me wrong. It is April 10th, and I'd like to belatedly congratulate you once again for making the right choice and canceling the Buffalo tour stop. Now, I know some people might argue that you had to do it because of the coronavirus. I'm going to say that you woke up one morning and you realized the colossal mistake you had made. I mean, dude, you can't be having a tour stop in a loser city like Buffalo, man. It's bad for your look. It's bad for your brand. And if it's bad for your brand, then it's bad for mine as well. Because let's face it, Rome, I'm going to do a little word association here. What's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear the words Jim Rome? Most people, not all of them, but most of them, are going to say, oh, yeah, Vic and NoCal. I mean, I got to tell you, man, at first when the announcement was made and I saw the date, April 11th, at first, I didn't see the second one, and I thought it said April 1st, which made sense because I just assumed you were pulling an April Fool's prank on those Buffalo losers, you know, and you were going to yank the football out from underneath them like Lucy and watch them fall flat on their Charlie Brown ass like they always do. I mean, do you like Buffalo? You think Buffalo's cool? I mean, I never heard anyone say, I'm going to Buffalo on vacation. What's so good about Buffalo? I mean, it's definitely not the women. Dude, 30% of the chicks in Buffalo look like Tom Berenger, all right? And the other 70% are the ugly ones. I mean, what's there to do in that town, man? What was Sokbra planning on doing out there? Was he going to sign up for, like, one of those guided tours, you know, where some blue-haired lady reads from a script as you ride around the city on a bus?
All right, folks, welcome to our guided tour of our shiny city of Buffalo. Buckle up and settle in, folks, because you're in for a treat. Up ahead to our left is City Hall. That's where the mayor's office is. And over to your right, you'll see the pride and joy of our city, the University at Buffalo, home of the Fighting Buffaloes. All right, folks, that concludes our tour. Please watch your step on your way out the bus.
What a dump. And, Ron, what exactly were your plans for Rick in Buffalo that day? I mean, were you going to bring him up on stage to some walk-up music, you know, like some kind of pro wrestler, like those oily, roided-up dorks, the Big Brothers? Was Rick going to come out to his favorite Goo Goo Doll song, like, all right, Buffalo Clones, I got a special guest for you. You know this guy. He is loud. He is angry. He is Rick in Buffalo.
Hey, soul sister, ain't that Mr. Mister on the radio?
And then Rick walks up on stage to his Goo Goo Doll song, but you can barely see him. Rome, the guy is 5'4", okay? He stands next to you on that stage. He was going to make you look like Groose. I mean, little shrinking Buffalo walks up on stage with his tiny little frame and that giant bald head of his. He was going to look like a bunch of army ants carrying a pumpkin across the stage. I mean, that's assuming, of course, that there'd be any room left on that stage after Rick's nose got up there. I mean, holy crap, man. Have you seen the size of that schnoz? I mean, it's good to know that if that teaching thing doesn't work out for Rick, he can always get a job as a DEA drug-sniffing dog. I don't know. I mean, think about this, Rome. If Rick were smart, and that's a big if, I know, but if he were smart, he could totally weaponize that schnoz during these times of coronavirus, you know? I mean, can you see Rick holding up a convenience store or taking over a bank? You know, Rick's holed up inside the bank with a bunch of hostages. The SWAT team is outside. They send in a negotiator. Rick gives his list of demands.
Okay, scumbag, you have my list of demands. I have 34 hostages. If every last demand on that list is not met,
to sneeze. Hey, war old man Rick showing up to the airport 4.5 hours before his flight is scheduled. Out.
Vic in NoCal. Vic must recall that the tour stop was supposed to be tomorrow, April 11th. Vic also said, hey, Rome, was it canceled because of the coronavirus, or did you finally come to your senses and realize what a bad look that would be for you and your brand? And consequently, if it's a bad look for you and your brand, it's a bad look for me being Vic. No, Vic, actually, it was because of the coronavirus. I really did want to go there, and I will go there, and I'll make good on that as soon as we figure out when it's right and the world has returned. My man, crushing Buffalo, crushing Rick, and the size of his nose, which he suggested he should weaponize at this time, and that there wouldn't be enough room up on the stage for anybody other than me, him, and his nose. Vic is still the dirtiest player in the game. 1-800-636-8686. Now, I'm not going to clap back and defend Buffalo. You know where I come out on Buffalo. I picked them to get the first tour stop. He's not talking me off that point. Now, Buffalo, if you want to come in and react, you go right ahead. Next hour, we have a deep dive on Ryan Lochte. Plus Dan Wetzel and his thoughts. All of that is coming up next hour. Stay tuned. You're in the jungle. I am Jim Rome. Do not go anywhere.